A fantastic start.
It says, there it goes.
Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, with me is my co-host Ray. So you mentioned Jim is missing again tonight, and we actually have some breaking news from him. He messaged me a little bit after last week's episode and indicated to me that Jim is going to be taking a mental health break, specifically for that reason, from not only our podcast, but all podcasts, including the three or four that he was doing on a weekly basis, as well as playing the game, as well as painting as well. He is going to finish off the commissions that he was working on and may come back to a few projects here or there if something strikes his fancy. But basically, here is somebody who, prior to COVID, was the reigning number one player in the ITC, is now, for mental health reasons, taking a step back from the sport and will be taking some time off. If you may have also noticed on his social media, he had already, prior to last week's episode, that's actually why he wasn't on last week's episode, he had sold off his entire Chaos collection, so something like 30,000 points worth, and he was actually delivering it to the buyer last week. That's one reason why he wasn't on the show. So, yeah, he does not have an army at this point, and is just going to take a break and from competitive 40K. So, kind of took us all by a little bit of a shock. And so again, the biggest thing to take a step from in this is, not the first time. We like to think of our hobby here as an up-and-coming sport, and we've seen recently in sports key athletes. You get Simone Biles from the gymnastics. I can't remember. I believe it was Naomi. I can't remember her last name. Was a famous tennis player at the U.S. Open. Also took some time off for mental health reasons. And then most recently, over the weekend, Calvin Ridley of the Atlanta Falcons did the same thing, and much to my chagrin, because he's on my fantasy team. But that's another issue. So we're here to support Jim in his decision. No, I don't have any other details. That's what he, and I want to respect his privacy with this. But I think the better thing to think about is this week, rather than giving us a like or another click on our Facebook page or whatever, reach out to somebody that you know. Maybe I haven't spoken to them in a while. Maybe someone who just say hello and see where they're at, because mental health is definitely something that is well disguised and well under diagnosed, and be a great opportunity to, you may be able to make a difference in somebody's lives this week. Ray, did you have any thoughts on Jim?
No, I did remember hearing a little bit about it on one of his shows, and mentioning that he was going to make the sale. I do seem to remember him mentioning that he still had a Space Marine Force that was painted up as... which one was it? That's it, the Soul Drinkers, yeah. So whether he does much gaming in that at any point, or if he, you know, is, you know, stepping away and isn't touching that either, it's important to take the time away if you feel like you need it. And I know exactly how you know, toxic certain people.
So we're here to support him, and we wish him best of luck. And of course, the door is always open for him to return to the show. So whenever that may be. And so that is a big loss, also not only for our show, but also for the community as in general. Because it's not only somebody who was number one in the rankings for the overall battle general, but also almost pulled off a double number one in hobby track as well. So be curious to see how this all plans out in the next few months. And we'll give you, if you have any updates, and we'll be sure to extend that to you in the meantime. So... other big news over the weekend, Games Workshop had themselves a little preview. And, Ray, what were your initial thoughts of this week's preview?
So, I was surprised by
a couple things. Yeah, so worst kept secret in the world.
Definitely not surprised by a few others. going straight to 40K, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about it I mean, I started hearing rumors about it back in, I want to say June, and that was about a box set with Gene Steeler Colt and Custodes. And it sounded like the strangest thing ever to me. I mean, I'm like, why would you have those two factions facing off? Well, they do actually do a pretty good job of explaining that.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that.
Why is it? It takes place on Terra. So, I don't remember if it's first mentioned in the 8th edition codex or the 7th edition codex, but there is mention that there is a Gene Steeler Colt on Terra. So, this isn't actually brand new. It's just the first time we're kind of seeing any really addressed in anything else. Along with it, this box is two new models. One we saw a potato picture of maybe a week or two ago. And I remember a lot of people laughing, saying that, yeah, this is a new Custodes, but wouldn't it be funny if it actually ends up being a picture of Jagatai? Because, you know, he's the last Primarch to have a model made of from Forge World. Which actually may end up being kind of funny when you consider what else they showed this weekend. And the other model of the two is one we had only heard rumors about, and that was of some sort of a saboteur. And I really like that model. I gotta say that right now.
Really? Wow.
It might be my favorite model to get released this year.
He's definitely got some interesting rules, which they previewed on the Warhammer community page today. So that was also interesting to take a look at.
Yeah. So when you go down the them talking about it, the name of the box set is Shadow Throne. The first thing that they talk about is a weapon called Remote Explosives. And it's got the longest range for explosives I've ever seen. Because in the past, we've only seen like maybe 6 inches for the explosives for Gene Steeler Colt. This one's range 24. It's got Assault 2d3, Strength 8, AP minus 3, and Damage 1. It's a blast weapon. And it mentions that you cannot target aircraft with this weapon. And each time an attack is made that is allocated to a vehicle or a monster, the damage...
This is pretty vicious when you think of this 2d3 assault. And then that can start adding up pretty quick.
Yeah, so you're looking at an average of 4. So the real trick comes into, well, what's its... You know, what is its ballistic skill going to be? A lot of stuff in Gene Steeler Colt, if memory serves, is ballistic skill 4. I think some of the characters have better ballistic skill. I don't know that this is going to. Can't say yet. But by the sounds of it, you're looking at least 2 that are going to go through on to hit. And when it comes to the to wound, with it being strength 8, I think that gets past a lot of... the transhuman kind of things, especially at least when it comes to orcs. So, you know, we're looking at if it's infantry, which you're not necessarily going to want to use this on infantry, you're looking at 2 damage. But if you're looking at, you know, vehicles or monsters, we're talking about, you know, 6 damage potentially coming at you. Now, if someone rolls really hot, then it's going to be a hell of a lot more, because that's 2d3, 6 damage for infantry, and 18 damage for vehicles and monsters at the max. Oh, yeah. The next thing you can do is perform a special action, which is to plant explosives, which I think we've only seen one other unit be able to do that so far, and that's the Incursors. This is a Reductus Explosives. At the end of the movement phase, or your opponent's charge phase, if any models are within 3 inches of this model's Reductus Explosives marker, it can use this ability. Roll 1d6 for each model, excluding aircraft, within 3 inches of this marker. Adding 2 if the model is a biker, monster, or vehicle. On a 4+, that model suffers 1 mortal wound, or 4 mortal wounds if that model is a monster or vehicle, and then you remove this marker from the battlefield.
I do like the idea. No, it's good. You want to point out what?
So I want to point out again that this is... Go ahead. I want to point out the fact that if this has a... This is something that affects each model, not unit, model. So if you have something like, you know, a unit of bikers of any sort come by, and they're all within 3 inches, they're all going to get affected by this.
Add 2 to the models. Is a biker, monster, or vehicle? So on a 4+ and a 2+ for those 3. It's a quick way to pump in some mortal wounds, especially like a 20-man blob of ad mech. Oh, there's a bomb over there. So, sorry.
Well, remember it has to, the models have to, it only counts models within 3 inches. So it's never gonna hit all 20. But if it gets 4 or 5, that's still gonna be a fair move. I think realistically this is gonna be something that people when it plants, people are going to just avoid. So the strategic thing to do is to put it on an objective if you're going to use this. Because what you're going to get is people are either going to go ahead and try to get the objective and just risk losing some models, or you're going to have them actively avoid that objective. And considering that this edition is very much a hold objective game,
what I was going to say is what we don't know at this point is what is the new cult ambush? Is it still blips? Is it simply a free return into reserves? Because that could actually give this guy a lot of mileage if he can go back into reserves and then deploy somewhere else on the table.
Yeah, I think that's really going to be the question. Because it could be that. It could be some of the models have a free move at the beginning of the game. That it really is, I think, a lot of people. What's going to keep a lot of people from really looking into the faction right now is that's one of their biggest things is cult ambush, right. And we have no idea how it may or may not change. But they do give us some other information about the unit, which is not, you know, melee or weapons. It's gear. Or in this case, more it's just special abilities. We've got the cloaked and the clandestine abilities, which I think this is what will help people who decide to use this model. The cloaked ability states that each time a ranged attack is allocated to this model, while it is receiving the benefits of cover, you add an additional 1 to any armor saving throw made
powerful
against that attack.
Yeah, because it's kind of like a double whammy there.
It's pretty useful. Oh yeah, especially when you consider the other rule, which is clandestine. That states while this model is within an area terrain feature, enemy models cannot target it with ranged attacks unless they are within 12 inches. And each time a ranged attack is made against this model, you subtract 1 from that attack's hit roll. So not only do you have to be within 12 inches, you're at -1.
Which is pretty crazy because you can't be targeted beforehand if you're more than 12 inches away. So it's like you're almost like a bodyguard without, but you're using terrain instead of the bodyguard unit. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah. It's very useful. So, best case is your best model might be a Space Marine with a 2+ to hit. It has to be within 12 inches, which means at that point it can get charged by whatever else may be close by. And even then, that 2 plus is becoming a 3 plus.
We'll see how it shapes up. I mean, yeah, there seems to be more questions than answers about Gene Cedar Colt at this point. But the other thing, yeah, big answer, big question, I should say, is when does Shadow Throne, easy for me to say, actually come out?
Let me see if that actually gets popped up at all. So, considering both codexes are supposed to come out in December, I'm going to take the wild guess December sometime. Maybe a little, but it may also be sooner. So, if I were to venture a guess, I would say sometime between mid-November and late December. I realize that that's like a 6 to 8 week window, but I could see them trying to get this out the door Black Friday weekend.
See what that comes out, because also gonna remember their matching codices are coming out too before the end of the year.
Yeah, but they've stated that the codexes are both going to be coming out in December. So it seems like most often they try to have these boxes come out either along with or before the codexes.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
So as I mentioned, there are two codices coming out, and obviously the Custodes would be the second half of this little box set. And they gave a little preview of their new character, who, minus Potato Gun now, we can now see a little bit of stats as well. He's nothing to sneeze at either.
No, so he's called a Blade Champion, and I've heard a lot of people describe him as a Custodes Lieutenant. He's got a Vault Sword, which has three different weapon profiles. Before you select the attack targets, you have to pick which one you're going to do. And you can kind of tell what's going to be going on, what the point of the weapon is, or at least the mode you're going with, just by the name. So the first is Behemoth, which is meant for vehicles and monsters. Now, in each case, it's going to be a range and type melee. This one is strength plus 2, AP minus 4, and damage 2. This has the ability that each time an attack is made with this weapon against a monster or vehicle, an unmodified hit of a 4 plus automatically wounds the target. So, I think most, if not all, of the Custodes have a very good weapon skill. So, 2 or 3 plus for sure. So, the fact that roughly half the dice you roll are going to end up a 4 plus anyway, and those 4 pluses are automatically wounding, so you don't have to worry about the to wound roll, it's pretty strong. Again, this is for monsters and vehicles. It doesn't mean that those are the only ones you can do.
What this thing also this guy comes with the base 6 attacks.
It's what it's technically meant for. I don't remember seeing.
That's what I remember that, kind of sticking out.
But it's possible I missed it. Oh yeah, it's 6. There, right here. Yeah, he's got 6 attacks. And that becomes even more fun when you look at the second profile, which is called Hurricanus. I'd say this is probably the more basic attack. It's not directed at any kind of target. It's just a basic target. So it's strength user, AP 1, and damage 1. And each time you make an attack with this weapon profile, you make 2 hit rolls instead of 1. So that those 6 attacks become 12.
That adds up pretty quick.
So you can... Yeah, it does. So There is one more weapon profile. This is called Victus. It's a strength plus 1, AP minus 4, and damage 3. This is meant for you to use when you're going up against characters. Why? Because each time an attack is made with this weapon with this profile against a character unit,
you can reroll it. I remember rerolling wounds. I remember rerolling hits a lot, but not wounds versus characters. So I thought that was interesting. I could be wrong, but that's at least my quick memory. I was like, don't remember seeing that.
No. Then when you're talking about having a damage 3 weapon, being able to reroll that can mean the difference between whether you take out the character you're facing or not. Because most characters will die to two attacks of this getting its way through. So, along with this, he's got the ability called the Consummate Swordsman, which states that each time a melee attack is made against this model, an unmodified hit roll of 1 through 3 always fails. And each time a melee attack is allocated to this model, add 1 to the armor saving throw.
That's just crazy.
So he's going to be hard to wound.
Yeah, built-in transhuman. It's like, oh, okay, great.
He's transhuman and, for all intents and purposes, is a Terminator. He's going to have a 2+ save. He's also got the Legacy of Combat, which states that at the start of the fight phase, if this model is within engagement range of any enemy units, it can fight first that phase. He's also eligible to perform a heroic intervention if within 6 inches horizontally and 5 inches vertically of any enemy unit. And each time this model makes a heroic intervention move, so long as it ends that move either closer to the closest enemy model or within engagement range of an enemy character, it can move up to 6 inches. All other rules for heroic intervention still apply.
That's crazy. It's interesting they make it specific, you know, with the 5-inch vertical, but he can heroically intervene, and when he does, he's better at what he does normally. It's just like, okay, all right.
Yeah. And then another thing we see mentioned is something I never thought
I'd see. He goes all the way to 11.
He's got a leadership characteristic of 11.
This one goes all the way to 11.
I've never seen anything higher than 10. Now, when it comes to custodes, I don't see leadership. When it comes to leadership, it's not really going to be something that comes up with morale. Why? Because we're talking about units of anywhere from singular, or more often 3 to 5 models. I don't think we ever really see a 10-man squad of anything for custodes. So, by the time you take out enough for a morale to really make a difference, you've pretty much taken the whole unit out anyway. And of course, this is a singular model, so, you know, he's not going to take morale for himself. It's possible that there are going to be ways that he can give his leadership to others, but again, it's not going to make much of a difference. So I think this is going to come into play more for things that take the opponent's leadership into account.
Yeah, I'm waiting my turn impatiently here. Your incubi. Leadership. Basically, if they roll over your leadership, then you are swinging last. So normally, 2d6. And try to beat a 2d6, 11 on a 2d6. Doesn't happen too often. And yes, Drukhari do have several debuffs to your, but the best case scenario is -3. So that brings it down to an 8. Still pretty stock standard stuff. So yeah, those tricks all of a sudden get nullified a little bit, which still brings me back to my original theory that Drukhari were actually fairly balanced if all the codices came out on time. No, it's not a very popular opinion.
Yeah. Well, you know, now we're entering the age of the orcs, so let's see how things continue.
Yeah, the leadership 11. All right, up there was strength 16. There? I think we're going to see that.
Oh, okay. I think too. That was about it. I do want to take a second. Now that we've gotten through the rules, I kind of ask, what do you think about
the nice thing about the box set is if this catches your interest, you're going to get a lot of stuff to get started. I don't know if this is basically two start collecting boxes in one, or you know what this is, but I like the idea. I do like it over, say, some of the other things we've seen where the rules are coming out within probably a week. You know, so like for example, the whole orc fiasco was, you know, 3 weeks of, is it legal? Is it not legal? You know, not everybody has the codex. So that part I like. I like how it tells the story. I have a grander idea, and I kind of want to save that for our next little topic, but it just, so I think they could have done more with it. Like you said, there's this grand story of, oh, by the way, the Genestealer cult are right below the Emperor's feet, and the custodes are intercepting this. Wow, that sounds fantastic. Maybe the basis for an episode of, I don't know, Hammer and Balter? And then, so that would have been a really cool way to, you know, you're kind of, I wouldn't say you're moving the story forward. I wouldn't say that. But you're moving the story in a direction we've never seen it before, or at least telling a story we haven't heard before. You know, so if we can finally, you know, stop talking about Cadia and start talking about these, all these other stuff that's going on.
Right.
And then have the crusade rules to match this campaign of rooting out the, right, this gene stealer infestation that's beneath the Emperor's feet. So, and then the icing. Oh, sorry. Uh-huh. No, I thought it was too, but I just said, I'm going to say it anyway. No, the icing on the cake was, and normally it's part of one of our new segments here. This month in Warhammer Plus, they had a battle report, which is, okay, that's nothing new. But what they did was they painted all the models to look like Angels of Death. You know, that super hyper gray style with the accents of red. And they reenacted one of the episodes in a kill team mission.
Yeah.
It was really cool. It was very enjoyable. And that's, I think, the way to go. You take the digital download method that Jim was talking about, and then here's the new rules. And, oh, by the way, here's the episode. And then here we're going to reenact it. It was really fun to watch. And lo and behold, it, you know, you got to see, was it movie Marines or was it realistic? And you can be the judge of that by the results of the report. It was really cool. So yeah, I think that
kind of, I'll have to watch it.
Yeah, it just seems like that was a great way to marry everything together. And at first, I thought, okay, maybe that's not realistic to get all these synergies to get in line. But then you go back to, I forgot which model we were talking about a few months ago. And the painter went on his website, oh, yeah, I remember painting that 2 years ago. And so if they've got 2 year lead time to make models, you should have enough time to do a short 11 minute animation. And that goes with the book that's coming out. I think if you did that on a regular basis,
yeah,
that'd be so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when it comes to the box set itself, you know, story aside, looking at it as a player, if you're interested in one of two armies and you have a friend who's interested in the other, and you don't own any models from that faction, this is a pretty good place to start. If you own the three characters from the Genestealer cult side, that's the Magus, the Primus, and the Patriarch, then you're not really going to get any value from this at all. because you can only have one of each of those characters in this in the army. Having multiple isn't going to help you at all. Nowadays, we're seeing these box sets coming out at about $200. Each side, that really only works out to you getting a new character for free. So again, if you own any... I'd venture to say that if you own anything from the Custodes side, no big deal. You're getting more. If you have a box, just one random box of the Neophytes, you're just expanding your army. But if you've got that box of those three characters that have already come out, you're not getting any value at all out of this box. Which I think in that regard, I think this box set falls short. Would it have really killed GW to replace these models with, say, maybe the female Magus and then put in some acolytes?
Or even like pure strains? Yeah, that or even how much is...
Yeah, pure strain.
How expensive are aberrants?
I don't think that would have hurt.
Money-wise. Hmm? Okay, so that wouldn't too much. Okay.
Points-wise or money-wise? I think they're about 50 or 60. But,
all right.
I mean, so the three characters are a $60 box set. If you go with the... Yeah, if you go with the female Magus and the pure strains, you're looking at maybe $10 more. And the pure strain models have been out long enough. They're not really going to be losing money for putting those in the boxes. So that's really my only gripe. Now, if this box set comes out as being 160 to 180, then at that point it's not that big of a deal. Because if you're paying each half gets it at $80 at 160, then you're paying it's like $50 for the Neophytes, and it's going to be $30 to $35 for the Saboteur. So that's $85 right there. But at $200, which is what I expect, we're talking $100. You're still paying. You're paying $85 for new models that you can put in an army, and if you've got those three characters,
right,
for the Gene Stealer Cult,
now is that something? Could that change in the new codex? That you could take multiples of those, or is that kind of like
They've kind of explained it in the fluff that there's only ever one of each of these. There's only ever one Primus pops up, only one Magus ever pops up. I mean, they even kind of explain that there's only certain generations will even have these pop up. Like a Magus will only be in the last couple of generations, the ones that come right before the cult starts producing.
A rhyme or strains to again. This.
One thing I do think, one thing I will say is looking at the way that this is set up, that Saboteur is going to be an elite model. At the very least, a non-HQ model. Because I don't think I've ever seen GW take a box set that is for the most part, it's like a patrol detachment.
Right.
They're not going to have four HQs in that box. Because you've already got three HQs in the Magus, Patriarch, and Primus. Sorry, I realized I had to prop.
Well, it's funny because that's something interesting perspective because you played the army, so you know exactly what's in it. I'm strictly looking at the models and thinking it seems like it's a bargain. I think I'll pick it up. But yeah, if you're an existing player, you're absolutely like, great. What am I going to do with these? It's a valid point. So,
well, I mean, not even an existing player. If you're just someone like, yes, I've had the army, but at this point, I've only got those three characters. I've only got those three HQ characters right now. So if I were to look at rebuying the army, I'm looking at this box set and thinking I'd be better off putting that $100 into a different direction.
Well, yeah. So I'd be curious to see what the start collecting box does look like. I wouldn't be surprised if it's same idea. You're starting characters. And
hey, listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right. This is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. You can just swap out those boxes and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy. The boxes help protect your models. And when you order, they come fast. The order is right. And for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com. And when you place your order, be sure to mention the Exterminatus podcast.
Well, although most of the other previews had nothing to do with 40K, a lot of Blood Bowl, a little bit of AOS. And although if you play Nurgle, good news, the Glot King are back. So those are some great conversion bait from Age of Sigmar line to add to your Death Guard armies. And so that's kind of cool. But little buried in there was the new Kill Team release. And there's a little snippet there that they kind of let the cat out of the bag. Guess what? Early 2022, we're getting a Tau Codex. So I thought that was fairly exciting because it's also definitely an army that needs a pretty significant rework to make it work in the new mission system that we have here in 9th edition. So I'll be curious to see how that all transpires and comes about. One of the key changes that I've heard a lot of key Tau players and competitive Tau players complain about is the Markolite systems. And of course, the main models from the Tau in this Kill Team box are Pathfinders. Why do you never see them on in the 40K table? It's pretty simple. Their chief ability is generating Markolite hits. Well, that's great and dandy. They shoot and use up their shooting attack to let another unit shoot better. And it's kind of like one of those, the benefits don't always reap the penalty in terms of giving up your shooting, especially because they also had all these really cool rail guns and other nifty weaponry and stuff like that. Well, if you read through the Kill Team description of the new war gear that they've got, now granted, this is a lot of tin hat and all that. So just bear with me here. It lends itself to believe that A, there's a new Markolite table on the way. Oh, it does kind of reshuffle the benefits. I can't tell you that any of these particular benefits are vastly superior to what the last one was. But it appears that Markolite hits now are automatic. Like, you do not roll to hit. You simply go, oh, I have a Markolite. I'm going to allocate this many Markolite hits to this unit. Yeah, so I could be wrong. It could be just a thing. So the way it works in Kill Team is you have an action. It's an action point system, very similar to the old days, if you guys ever played Space Hulk. And yeah, if you use a Markolite, it simply says expend an action, and you put a Markolite on something. It never says anything that a Markolite is heavy one, that you are, rolling to hit for this thing. It just simply says you lose an action. Now, in the economy of the new Kill Team rules, losing an action or spending a special action is very significant. It essentially is giving up an attack, but most models and Pathfinders fall in this category, have two actions per turn, or per, they have another word for turn. I can't remember what it was. So it's still fairly significant, but in the terms of how a 40K thing would work, does that mean they auto hit? That'd be kind of cool. The other thing that was alluded to when they talked about the new Sisters of Battle Scout things, I don't know what they were called. I actually have trouble pronouncing that word. That there's a lot of the special gear that we see for Kill Team that has huge significance to the game. Some of that will not carry over into 40K. So that might just get labeled a close combat weapon. So stuff like that.
Oh, actually, yeah. They released a data sheet.
Pretty cool stuff.
for 40K.
I did not. I just read the article. I did not actually look at the data sheet.
Did you actually see it?
The models do remind me of that show Warrior Nun. I was looking at the Netflix, on my phone. So I was going to look at it. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. All right. So the Sisir's Novitiate Squad. All right. So they're unit size 10 in 40K. The unit cost is 75 points. The upgrades they have available are each 5 points. They pretty much all have to do with the superior. So, of course, auto pistol, auto gun, bolt pistol, bolt gun. There's that Minestrone Flamer. In 40K, it's range 12, assault D6, strength 5, damage 1, no AP. And the basic automatically hits. There's the plasma pistol. There's a standard version, supercharged version. All of those various melee weapons all fall under the novitiate melee weapons profile, which is range melee, type melee, strength plus 1, so it becomes strength 4, damage 1, and each time the bearer fights, it makes one additional attack with this weapon. Other war gear. There's a sacred banner, which allows to reroll advance and charge rolls, and the simulacrum imperialis, which is once per phase, the bearer's unit can perform one act of faith, even if another unit from your army has already performed an act of faith during this phase. They have the abilities of Acts of Faith, Sacred Rites, Shield of Faith, and Impetuous Fervor. Each time this unit fights, if it made a charge move, then until that fight is resolved, add 1 to the attack's characteristics for all models in this unit. And Sisters Novitiate. If your army is battle-forged, you cannot include more Sisters Novitiate units than Battle Sister Squads units in each detachment of your army.
Interesting. All right. Sounds like they almost got downgraded to cultist level.
They kind of actually seem like it. So, the Sacred Banner replaces an auto gun. The Simulacrum Imperialis replaces an auto gun. Up to 2 sisters can each have their auto gun replaced with a flamer. And any number of Sisters Novitiate can each have their auto gun replaced with melee weapons. So yeah, they really kind of sound like a sort of cult model. Cultists. They just, their movement 6, weapon skill 4, ballistic skill 3, strength toughness 3, 1 wound, base 1 attack for the novitiates, 2 for the superior, leadership 7 and 6, and then a save of 4 while the superior has a save of 3.
All right. Oh. Okay.
Oh, and
now I got to flip over to the codex to figure out, what did they benefit from? Wait a minute. Because I know there's got to be some combos for that. Yeah, I don't know. In one respect, you know, the sisters didn't have a second troop choice, so kind of nice. And so I don't think this is backbreaking, but it's definitely what's going to absorb a lot of... it's a good blocking unit, that's for sure.
Yeah, this isn't going to break the game. I think it's going to help give the sisters just a little bit more flavor. And I am never against units having more, armies having more troop options, so long as they make some sort of sense.
Yeah, pretty cool. All right, then. So beyond that, we had a pretty light tournament week this week. And so I think the only event you were telling me about was a team event in Spain.
Well, there was that, and then I saw an event called the Factorum Warhammer 40,000 GT.
Okay.
That was at the Factorum in Sutton Veny, England. It had 33
people there. There was a 34th person, but I can't say for sure if they were actually there because it only shows them playing one round and they got a zero. That kind of leads me to believe that they might have been a no-show. Can't say for sure, but kind of leads me to think that way. And I gotta say, it's something crazy happened because Stephen Box
is
only showing as having played one round.
Hope everything's okay with him.
But here is the top five. Yeah, I don't know. He's usually not one to quit after the first round. But all right, top five. We got Robbie Sweeney in fifth with Death Guard. Sam Nash is in fourth place with Space Wolves. In third, Jack Beeman with World Eaters. In second, Jack West with Adeptus Custodes.
Wow.
And in first, James Pilkington.
All right, orcs once again on top. Congratulations to all our players here. So, yeah, we're seeing a lot more orc players coming in on top. That buggy list seems to be quite the thing.
Yep. So something interesting I noticed with this particular tournament is I didn't see anybody listed.
Maybe the Fabricator Forge banned them.
Admech.
Just a thought. Not that I would openly suggest that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of strange. I think that may have something to do with why we ended up with an Adeptus Custodes player in second place. Not saying he's not a good player. I don't know. But I feel like, you know, anytime you see a strong army just like flat out not there, you tend to see a bit of a shift in.
You have a new Alpha Predator out there, and then, you know, just like Game of Rock, Paper, Scissors, in a world where it's all rocks and scissors, you know, suddenly paper is becomes everyone's best friend, you know, take out one of the other guys. And then once all the rocks are gone, all of a sudden you need all the scissors in the world. So then rock comes back in fashion. Anyway, so that is our one tournament of the week. I realize I've been negligent in the ITC top 10. And I got some interesting factoids to add to this. So let's go over the top 10 while we have it here. 10th place, James Keeling of Goonhammer fame comes in at 1,250 points. Anthony Vanilla falls into 9th place. Ben Cherwin of the Midwest. In 8th, Manny Chima from England making a triumphant charge to the top here. He's been winning a lot of events over that side of the pond. He's in 7th place. 6th place, Nick Natavati. 5th place, Colin McDade, friend of the show. 4th place, Jack Harpster. 3rd place, John Lennon, still trying to regain that top spot. Sean Naden does leapfrog John for the 2nd spot, but still holding on top with 1,404 points. Brad Chester. So, yeah, a large contestant of Art of War guys at the top there. But let's see what happens, because if you look at both Manny Chima, Anthony Vanilla, and James Keeling, their 6th score is significantly low. Look who's talking, I know. But they're probably about 180 points. And what we've seen so far is most GTs and majors, specifically majors, have been netting at roughly around 230 points based on their attendance. So they could easily, if they won one of those GTs between now and LVO, they could pick up additional 50 points, you know, 230 versus 180 points. That would replace that score. 50 points right now, James Keeling's in 10th place at 1250. An extra 50 points vaults him into 4th place. He would catch up to Jack Harpster. Now, put that in perspective, Brad Chester, Sean Needham, and John Lennon, their 6th score, so their lowest score that they're trying to eliminate, is 230 points or higher. So basically, they need to go to a much larger event, which, as far as I know, Sean Naden is the only one who went to SoCal, and I don't see any super majors on the docket between now and Christmas. So it may come down to LVO for the finals to determine which one of these three guys gets the final placement. But the season's not over yet, so keep listening to the Exterminatus podcast. for extended updates and breakdown analysis. Yeah, but all these guys still have a shot, as well as, let me just look at Nick Natavati here, as he's been spending a lot of time in the broadcast booth lately. Yeah, his sixth was Clutch City GT when he came in fourth. That was 200 points. So he could pick up possibly 30 more points. That would put him at 310. So he can go from sixth to about fourth place. So he's really got to, again, all the positioning again would be a little difficult to catch Brad Chester unless something happened at LVO. Six. Colin McDade, his lowest score is 204 points. So picking up an extra 20. He could leapfrog Jack Harpster, but yeah. So pretty much your top six are kind of locked in at this point. They're not going to be able to really move a lot of points over the next few months, but it's that 7 through 10 slot. And then, of course, let's take a look just below that. Dun, dun, dun. You can always see the top 25 on our Facebook page. We put up a little update every week on how players are doing throughout the top 25. Yeah, Rubio is 1 point behind James Keeling, and he's another one. Basically, if there's a tournament in England, it's either, if it's not won by Manny Chima, it was won by Malik. So I'm not sure if it's Malik or Malik. I've heard both. So Mr. Rubio, if you could let us know, was your preferred pronunciation, I'd appreciate it. Thomas Ogden from Utah is only at 1235, so he has another opportunity to vault from 13th place back into the mix. And I just want to take a look what his lowest score is. He's got 1, 2. Yeah, his lowest score is actually 153. So he could easily drop up 80 points, which would move him up pretty quick. And of course, some other guys, famous names that are lurking there at the bottom. Matt Root, who won the Lord Marshall series by taking the last tournament off. That's how big of a lead he had. He's sitting in 15th place. Johnny Velasquez, who has been in the top 10 for the last few weeks, slid down to 14th place. I'm sure he's eager to get back in there. Both Dan Sammons and Junior Flahey have made large strides over the last few weeks. And, of course, Mark Perry upset John Lennon earlier this month. He's down at 22nd place. So they all are within striking range of the ITC top 10. Ray, anything else to add this week before we wrap things up?
Well, if you haven't got your ticket yet, there are still three available for the Ocotillo Onslaught, which is this weekend at the Glendale Civic Center.
Yep, we are a GT. Yep, yeah. Got our numbers. So pretty exciting stuff. getting really excited to get terrain done. Did a lot of painting today, as a matter of fact. Almost went through a quart of black primer. Give you how much painting I was doing today. So it's a pretty big project there. And I'm excited for it. That's a great opportunity to actually meet Ray and I. We'll both be in attendance. And as an added bonus, if you want to check out the festivities from the privacy of your own home, we'll be streaming the event as well. We're not sure if we're going to be streaming the top three tables or just the top table. We're actually going to see the layout of the – we just talked about the layout with the venue today, and it looks like we'll probably just do the top table. But you can see that on our Spike Club, which is our 40K team, our Spike Club streaming channel on Twitch. And we can follow all the action throughout the weekend. Plus, I'll be doing a couple live hits on Facebook, so which I've never done before. I'm so excited. Looking forward to doing that as well. So, yeah, it's good. It kind of...
If you're holding off because of maybe you're one of those people who prefers to stick to the hobby track, we are implementing that.
Yep.
I know we have hobby track is in place.
Player packet is also on the Facebook page as well as a downloadable PDF. The big question, of course, is terrain. We're actually doing something a little different. We're experimenting a little bit in that it is a hybrid method of both mission-based place terrain as well as player optimized terrain. So the idea is that there are five terrain pieces that are designated by the mission that they'll be in the those places. And then the player who wins the roll off for defender chooses a pool of terrain to be player optimized. And they will be different. So the player across from you may have different terrain pieces than the one that you decide to pick. That's another tactical decision you can make early on. That way, the defender role actually means something to the game. So that'd be a lot of fun. Yeah, I'm excited to see. I just get the rust off. I'm excited to see everyone there. It's been a lot. We've seen a few people intermittently. Our local game store kind of started and stopped a little bit. And so it's good to see a lot of people, a lot of fresh faces as well. That I've been kind of talking to over the internet. So I'm excited for that. But just good to bring back. It's a great venue. We've had a lot of tournaments there already. And so I'm looking forward to being back there and getting a full weekend in of 40K. So looking forward to it. So with that note, head on over to BCP. You can be the last to pick up those last three tickets. And in the interim, my name's Eric. This has been the Exterminatus Podcast. And don't forget, reach out to someone this week. Mental health is something that is a silent illness, and reach out, say hello, find out how friends are doing at this point. Make sure to do that this week. Talk to you next week.